Okay, this is the time in our gathering when we look at the Bible. If you're new to church, we sing songs of thanksgiving, we hear stories, we baptize people on a regular basis, and we hear from the Bible, which is the Word of God. This is the last of four Sunday mornings looking at how we as Christians, in challenging times, how we live. I think nobody would deny that we live in challenging times. Now, if I had to ask you for one thing that dominates our thinking as a nation at the moment, what do you think it would be? It begins with B and it ends with T. I was thinking of another word. No. It's this one, isn't it? It's Brexit. It dominates our whole lives at the moment. And in some ways, rightly so. Because we're making, it's not politically I'm speaking here, but we are making changes which will affect our nation, our children, our grandchildren for many years to come. So you're not going to, people are going to get stirred up about this stuff. But we saw a few weeks ago that this thing of convicted civility. Do you remember? It's not the demonstration of your truth that matters. It's the demeanor of your argument. In other words, it's not in some ways, you know, you may be right, but it's your conversation. It's how you speak to people. And without saying any more, I think many people in public life need to look again how they speak to one another and how they speak about the things they hold really dear and are convicted about. But Brexit has been quite a topic that's dominated our thinking. But over the past weeks, we've looked at other things as well. If you remember, we've looked at the whole thing of poverty in our nation at the moment. Statistics at the moment, most of these statistics point in one direction that poverty, around 20% of people in our nation will be classed as in poverty. When you look at the demonstration, we did that several weeks ago, how you classify poverty. The massive growth in food banks, and we have one here, and food banks are like the growing industry in our nation. So I think we would be foolish to deny that poverty is part of the challenge of our lives today. We're classed actually as one of the S10 churches, the posh end of town. Well, we're not posh. Put your hand up if you're posh. God bless you. Well done. But seriously, we're not. We have lots of people in this church who struggle financially. And so poverty is something in challenging times that we as Christians need to be aware of and asking the Lord how we deal with this. And in 3 weeks' time, on the 20th of October, is our Thanksgiving Sunday, our annual Thanksgiving Sunday. When we come and make a financial offering, not for a particular thing, but just because God's been good in my life over the past 12 months. I just want to make an offering financially that this is, yeah, I'm going to put this in the plate or I'm going to give online or whatever it is, just because God's been good to me and my family. And I would hope more over the next few weeks that we give a percentage of that away. And I think one of the things we're looking at is to see how many schools are running breakfast clubs because children go to school hungry, and we would love to support that. We need to find out from you if you know teachers here. We're going to give money away so that we can address some of the, in a small way, but you know, one person fed is one person who's not hungry. But we also looked at how in challenging times it's affecting our children as well. That of those 20% in poverty, we learned that 30% of our children are classed as in poverty. And by the end of 2020, the Children's Society's survey would estimate that this could be as many as 5 million children, 0 to 16, would be classed as living in poverty. Now, all of us would agree that that's not quite right, is it? So again, how do we address that? How do we help people in that way? All those two together in these challenging times with the things on the screen, there is another key issue that is becoming more prevalent, and it's anxiety. People are becoming more and more anxious. So as Christians, how do we deal with that? And I actually put some figures down here as I did this research. that anxiety now in our nation is the largest cause of the burden of disease in the UK. Some have more burdens than others, and anxiety seems to be at the moment the largest. It's costing £105 billion a year is the cost of anxiety costing our nation. I didn't know this, but I looked at three sources for this, that 50% of mental health, people, it affects people before the age of 15. So before the age of 15, 50% of those who are classified as having some kind of mental health issues. I mean, that is quite a striking figure. But even more than that, 75% people will be affected by the age of 22. I had to relook at those figures and find other sources, because I find that really quite disturbing. But in our own story here at this church, this evening, when we gather lots of students and young adults in this place, last week there were 175, and 90-odd% were of that age group, that in our own story here, an experience with our pastoral care team, so many young people in that age group are suffering in some way, manifesting in all kinds of ways, self-harm and suicidal thoughts, eating disorders, all kinds of stuff. It manifests in all kinds of different ways. And so we have a responsibility as a church that attracts lots of young people. How can we, in these challenging times, help them? I'll come to that in a minute. This survey here, that the UK is now ranked 23rd out of 28 by 15-year-olds for life satisfaction. So when the survey was done with 15-year-olds on different criteria that would, you know, happiness, life satisfaction, we now come 23rd out of a table of 28. It's a great nation to live in, but something's not quite right, is it? And again, two sources for this one, that one in six workers in the workplace will experience anxiety in their workplace at some point. And actually, 49% of all lost days in the workplace in this nation are through anxiety-related issues. Now, I'm not going to ask you to put your hands up if you've ever felt anxious. Well, somebody did put their hand up. It's good. We all feel anxious, but actually, it's when it becomes this constant thing in our lives. And so anxiety is quite big. And so we ask the question, where's the hope? You know, just where is the hope these days? And it was great to hear Becky this morning that I sensed hope in my life. She didn't come to church, to the gathering, desperately looking for it. She'd been praying for hope and healing. But in that moment, by the grace of God, hope came along. But actually, if you mix all these together, I think if I had to put my finger on one thing that affects all of us more now than it did, all this stuff wrapped together, is this word, anger. We're becoming an angry people. Becoming angry, whether it's, you know, road rage. When I started driving, there was no such thing as road rage. I mean, I drove a Morris 1000, and it didn't go above 42 miles an hour. You can't have rage when you're driving at that speed, full on, and the car's shaking, you know? It just doesn't work. You learn to pray in case the ball joints split and the wheels go like this, you know what I mean? But how do we deal with anger? How do you deal with anger? Well, the Bible, as Christians, in challenging times, we believe the Bible is a much better anger management plan for us. Much better. And so we're going to look at the Bible now, and this is a story of the disciples of Jesus, his followers, who were anxious, perhaps a bit angry, frightened. Jesus has died. He's gone. The plan is finished. And then he appears to them after the resurrection. And this is what he said to them. Later on that day, the disciples had gathered together, but fearful of the Jews. The word fearful there, we get the word phobia, and the word means terrified. There's all kinds of ways to describe that. Some people often say, I'm really frightened, but terror is something else. Maybe you've been to see, had some test results, and you're worried and anxious and fearful, and you go and see the doctor, and that moment when you sit opposite the doctor or the specialist, or your results have come back, and you are terrified that doctor's going to say, you have got cancer, or you are going to die. Do you know when it all stirs up in your mind? This is it. I'm finished. I need to sort out the will. You know, I need to get this sorted. And then it's more than just frightened. It grips you as if you're like, you can't breathe. And then the other side of the desk, the doctor says, you're clear. There's nothing there. In that moment, you move from terror to something else. Because Jesus entered, stood among them and said, peace to you. Then he showed them his hands and his side. The disciples, seeing the master with their own eyes, were exuberant. So they moved from fear to exuberance, which means overwhelming joy. And if any of you have ever had that experience, overwhelming joy, which a moment before you were in absolute terror. That's what's happening here. Why did that happen? Because Jesus, who is God, Christians believe, stood there and said, peace to you. Now, peace was a greeting of the day. These Jewish people, when they met somebody on the street, they'd say, peace. A bit like in Sheffield, we'd go, how's it going then? All right. That's a kind of Sheffield term there. Nobody understands it unless you're in Sheffield. Or, if you're really friendly, all right, love, I'll move on. I'll have to translate this sermon from Sheffield speak into ordinary. But Jesus says peace. Now, the word peace here actually means something quite specific. It means completed, fitting together, finished. So body, mind, and spirit all together, bam, at peace. So when he says that to them, and he's there saying it, the terror turns to absolute joy. Jesus repeated his greeting, peace to you. Then he goes through the plan. One, as the Father has sent me, I send you. That's the plan. That's the whole idea. God sent me, I'm sending you. Number two, he took a deep breath and breathed into them, receive the Holy Spirit, he said. We saw that last week. So number one, I'm sending you. Number two, I'm going to give you the power to go out and speak. And then number three, this is what you're going to speak about. If you forgive someone's sins, they're gone for good. If you don't forgive sins, what are you going to do with them? I love that phraseology in the message. So number one, I'm going to send you out. Number two, here's the power you need. Go out and speak these things. And number three, this is what you say, forgiveness. It's all about forgiveness. It's a little like, we're going to have a general election very soon. It's coming, we all know. It is coming. It's like somebody knocking on your door, opening and saying, hi. And if I went, hi, I'm Mick, and I'm your independent candidate for here, for Hallam. Do you think that's a good idea? What do you ring? How do you think that would go down? I am Mick, I'm your independent candidate. So I've been sent. I've got a confidence, knock on a door. Hi, I'm Mick, I'm the independent candidate for Hallam. And then they go, so, what have you got to say to me? And I go, I don't know. I've got no idea. I like your flowers on the drive, by the way. Love your door. Very cool. Love the color of the house as well. Slam. People want to know what you have to say, how your policies can change things. It's the same with us as Christians. We're sent out and we have the Holy Spirit, but we really don't know what to say to people sometimes. Well, if you're stuck for anything, it's this. It's forgiveness. You are forgiven. Are you forgiving other people? You see, forgiveness is the doorway to peace. If you hold unforgiveness in your life, you will never, ever fully know the peace of God in your life. Can't mix. Just doesn't work. The two don't mix. The peace of God doesn't mix with unforgiveness. I've said before many times that I came from a family which modeled dysfunction. I had brothers and sisters who never forgave each other, and they're all dead. And they all died in unforgiveness over petty, silly, daft things. I'm not going to forgive him. It's his fault. I'll wait for him to forgive me. Then he dies. A bit late now, isn't it? And then they die feeling regret that they didn't sort it out. So somebody dies in unforgiveness, somebody dies in regret. And I, even as a young age, I didn't become a Christian until I was 28 and didn't go to church. But actually, even at a young age, I thought, this is a particularly stupid way to live. Because unforgiveness holds you in bondage, not the other person. It's like me saying to Dave, Dave, I'm not going to forgive you. And Dave goes, okay, about what? I'm like, excuse me, I have no idea what you're talking about. I didn't even think about it. What have I done? Do you see what I mean? The other person probably even doesn't know. The person affected is you. And so Jesus said, you've got to start forgiving people. At the end of the Lord's Prayer in Matthew's Gospel, Jesus gives the Lord's Prayer, and right at the end he says this, if you forgive anyone, their sins are forgiven, because God's forgiven you. If you don't forgive anybody, then how can God forgive you? Pretty powerful, that. So like, God's forgiven me, I'm a Christian, I know the peace of God. But she's a pain in the backside at work. I ain't going to forgive her. She got a promotion before me. He took the last chocolate biscuit on the plate. I'll never forgive him. I finished up with a rich flipping tea. You know what I mean? Stupid and ridiculous to something that Jesus said, forgive if you want to know peace. Say sorry. That one of the greatest things a human being can say in their life is, I am sorry. And it's one of the hardest things to say. Because we get hurt by people. But if God's forgiven me, I need to forgive other people. I'd like you to think about, when was the last time somebody said sorry to you? When was the last time somebody said sorry to you? And then, when was the last time you said sorry to someone? It's a bit crunchy, this one, isn't it? When was the last time somebody said sorry to you? And when was the last time you said sorry to someone else? I would love you just for a minute or two to boldly go where no one has gone before and share that with the person next to you. Now, if you are sat next to your spouse, this will be an interesting conversation. This could be incredibly releasing or exceedingly quiet moment. Off you go. When was the last time somebody said sorry to you that you can remember? When was the last time you said sorry to someone else? Off you go. Now, it'd be good if we remembered those conversations. If you didn't get a chance to finish it off, then maybe at the end grab a coffee and come and sit back down here and talk with the person at the side of you. But it's good to remember these things. And maybe during the day, God would bring to mind these things. And this Bible passage here, what it actually means is this. If in the original version, if you don't forgive someone's sins, they are retained. And the actual word means this. Jesus is saying, if you don't forgive someone, the word means to grasp tightly. So maybe years ago, or somebody let you down or hurt you, it's all being covered up. You grasp it tightly. It's there. I need peace in my life. And you can't get it because you're all tight inside. You're grasping unforgiveness. But Jesus said, the word forgive here, and in the New Testament, the word forgive is it's a very powerful word. It means to cast away. You throw it away. Released. It actually means physically to, it was written in Greek this, to throw away like that, which is the exact opposite of grasp tightly. So rather than living a life like that, I'm all right. My life's okay. I've got a bit of peace. I'm all right. I'm getting on. We're okay. We're fine. I'm just a bit stressed, but I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. And then all of a sudden, in that moment, you realize, this is what life's really like. I don't need to live like that. Yes, they hurt me, but I can forgive them. That's what Jesus is saying. That opens the door to peace. This wholeness and completeness. And sometimes we see peace like this, when the children stop crying and go to sleep. That is the perfect child. Our children are like that all the time. They never cried. The vicarage children are perfect all the time. Then I woke up again from that dream because the kids were crying. But peace It's like the outside stuff stops. Or sometimes peace is like this, when you're just watching that sunset. It's like an external thing. So it's like a freedom of noise, the kids stop crying just for a moment, or it's a freedom of work. You're not working in this anxious place, you are just got that moment, and they're good. But we all know they stop because kids cry again. And unfortunately, you have to get on in your car and drive back to work. You can't stay sitting looking at the sunset forever. These are temporary peace. But this is the peace that the Bible speaks about. In the busyness of life, with everybody rushing around, in the middle of it, Jesus said, peace to you. Now, does that mean I never get anxious? No, of course we will. I mean, you're not saying like Christians, oh, we never get anxious. Of course we do. It's part of the human condition. However, a man called St. Paul said in the Bible, have no anxiety about anything, but in everything, in prayer, make your request to God and the God of peace will be with you. What he's actually saying there is, yes, you'll get times when you worry and you whittle a bit and you're anxious. However, that's different to living a life 24/7 of anxiety, constant anxiety, which shapes your every breathing, living, waking moment. You don't have to live like that, Jesus says. You can live and be complete in his peace, even in the midst of all this stuff going on around you. That's the peace Jesus is talking about. So, just to finish, I think as we look in a moment at challenging times, to receive this peace, in my experience, there are four things. The first one is to receive forgiveness. And to do that, you need to receive Jesus. So if you're here this morning, I'm no embarrassment in saying, if you want to receive this peace, you receive Jesus. If you've never been sure you've received Jesus into your life. But what does that mean? You'll know it when you receive him this morning. Receive Jesus into your life. Become a real follower of Jesus Christ. In that moment, his peace is planted in you. So receive forgiveness, and today when you do that, in that moment, give forgiveness. Maybe today you need to text someone or ring them or send a carrier pigeon to them, whatever it is, and say, I just want to say, I've not been right with you, and I just want to say that it hurt me, but I forgive you. I hope you'll forgive me. They may be surprised, but something happens in you. So forgiveness, do you need that today? It all starts with forgiveness. And once forgiveness is received and then given, three amazing things as your life starts to change. You are kind. It's kindness. The kindness of God comes in to your life. And kindness is looking for the good in people instead of the bad in people. Kindness means to look for the good in everyone you see. You start to live a life of kindness. You start to live a life of generosity. And generosity means to give stuff away. So all of a sudden, you used to be a person who held on to it. You now give it away. You used to be people who were looking for the angle. What's in it for them? Better watch out. You're looking for the kindness, the goodness in them. You start to be generous. And then the final thing is hospitality. You open up your life and your home to people. Kindness, generosity, hospitality. Put those together with forgiveness, and the equal sign says peace.